This revolution is not going away.
This is the Ron Paul Liberty Report with Ron Paul, Daniel McAdams, and Chris Rossini.
We are all ambassadors of the Ron Paul doctrine, and it's so simple. Just tell the truth.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today, we have Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you this morning.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you this morning?
Doing well, doing well.
Good.
We got to deal with your, well, I don't know, I better not even kid. I was going to say your favorite senator. Your favorite senator that you like to expose.
Yeah.
So, yes, we're going to be talking a little bit about Lindsey Graham, but we're really talking about the American foreign policy with Iran, which we find a few mistakes in, and it's sort of end up badly if they don't change their tune. But they changed their tune this last couple of weeks. We've always known that Lindsey was a neocon, but now he's a super neocon.
Yeah, neocon
matter
plus.
Of fact, yeah, now he's the head advisor to the president, it looks like. Yeah. You know, who knows what really goes on, but he's out there. But and there's a lot of stories about him, but the one that caught me my attention the most was the fact that he goes overseas to
Israel, yeah.
Israel to talk about the Iran. He goes every 2 weeks. He broadcasts from there. He has a press conference and everything. He's big. He's big on this.
He's bigger there than he is here.
Oh, boy, I am so surprised at what's going on there. But it's such a shame. But our friend Dave DeCamp reports on this, and he always does a good job. But his headline this morning is from Israel. Senator Lindsey Graham pushes for war on Iran while admitting U.S. troops could be hit. Oh, my, that's what must be a real war. Maybe does he get credit for being more honest?
Yeah, he gets. Yeah.
Or tragic.
Yeah, more tragic.
But anyway, it's shifting, and definitely the shift between his relationship with the president is rather recent, although they were probably buddies, but they're super buddies now. It looks like, people kid, but seriously, they indicate that the last person that Trump talks to is his biggest influencer. So right now, the person that's listening, talking to his ear is Lindsey Graham. And it doesn't look good as far as I'm concerned. There's lots of threats, and if we do what we threaten, and it seems like the president's going along with all this, that the bombs will fall, and if one goes astray and hits Tehran, watch out. So yeah. I think it's not a good mood. It's moving us closer to a much bigger war. And a lot of military personnel and equipment moving around the world. So this is something that I will keep an eye on, and we pray and hope that somebody would wise up and say, we have a new organization dealing with peace. Why aren't they talking about peace? Why are they starting to have a war? Oh, I know why. Because they're going to stop the war, and it's all over. We finished it. Now we need to go, and we can hire some people out to rebuild the bombing that we do. So we bomb them, then we repair them, then we control them, and then we run elections in their country and said we gave them democracy.
Yeah. Well, just when you were mentioning that about them being buddies, I was looking up because I remember there's a lot of quotes. They weren't always buddies. In fact, here's what he had to say about Trump. When Trump ran the first time, this is Lindsey Graham, Senator Graham, Trump's best buddy. He said, "You know how to make America great again? Tell Donald Trump to go to hell. He's a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot. He doesn't represent my party. He doesn't represent the values that men and women who wear the uniform are fighting for. He's the ISIS man of the year. This is what he said. And now they're hanging out.
A little hypocrisy there.
There's a lot going on because he knows he can cajole Trump. Remember, he calls him, that's why I was joking earlier, he calls him, you're Reagan plus, you know, trying to get him to go to war. And that's what he's doing. He's just joking him. But he said that's just a minor of what the stuff he was saying before about Trump. So he hated Trump until he decided he could use Trump or try to use Trump. And I was thinking all along, because we were talking about Senator Paul earlier, and I know that they've played golf before, he and President Trump, I mean. But can you imagine preferring to play golf with Lindsey Graham over Senator Rand Paul? I mean, we're both biased because we happen to like Senator Paul a lot more. But can you imagine just from hanging out, you know, what it would be? So anyway, so here's the article. Put this up, and we're going to play a couple of clips because Senator Graham did a press conference, as you said, Dr. Paul, in Israel, of course. It's not good enough for him just to be put on that go back one if you can. It's not enough for him to be on every single Sunday show. He also has to go to Israel and grab the microphone. But here it is from Dave DeCamp. From Israel, Senator Graham pushes for war on Iran while admitting troops can be hit. Let's listen to that first video. This is now, we did talk about this yesterday, but after our show, this quote went viral. This clip went viral. Everyone was talking about this. And we're disgusted about him saying, yeah, they're going to get killed. So what? Let's play it on that first video. Here we go.
And absolutely they could. Can Iran respond if we have an all-out attack? Absolutely they can. I think the risk associated with that is far less than the risk associated with blinking and pulling the plug and not helping the people as you promised.
Okay, that's enough for that one. Imagine going over to a foreign country and saying that American soldiers are going to get killed in this, but we think the risk is worth it. It's better than backing down. It's all, war for him is always better than diplomacy, you know, always.
Pretty sick. I keep wondering how the people, because there's a lot of good people in South Carolina. We have made a lot of friends, and they were good conservative constitutionalists and libertarians. I wonder whether there's ever anybody in South Carolina that gets, maybe that's why he's overseas.
Yeah, maybe.
So much.
But don't forget, they booed you when you endorsed the Golden Rule, so there must be a couple of people over there. I don't know what's going
Those
on.
Those are plants.
I'm sure the good ones are definitely still there. Hopefully they'll put him out of work in this coming election. But if you go to the next clip, South Carolina Senator said the U.S. decision on potential military action against Iran is weeks away, not months. Of course, he's pushing and pushing and pushing for it. DeCamp adds, all signs indicate that if the U.S. bombs Iran, Tehran will not hold back in its response or provide the U.S. with a warning ahead of time, as it did before, launching retaliatory missile strikes. Many U.S. bases and warships are in range of their missiles. So there will be casualties. There will be Americans dying. There may well be ships either at the bottom of the sea, Dr. Paul, or rendered out of commission. And a few people that that know a little bit about this on X have pointed out that you don't have to sink a carrier. If you just put a hole in the top or if you do something to the runway, these aircraft, these fighter jets, are very sensitive. They can't just take off anywhere. So it's very easy to put them out of commission as well. So these things are going to happen, but Graham doesn't care because he can smell that war coming and he loves it.
Yeah, and of course he has military experience.
That's a jag, yeah.
So he can run the world and decide when we'll go to war and decide who's going to be killed. Of course, during Vietnam, we had a suggestion that the people who, you know, vote to keep the troops there and thousands being killed, that the proposal was made that the members of Congress who vote for this war ought to go and be in the front lines. Yeah. There'd be a lot less of them. Yeah. But that doesn't happen. There's always somebody else that they can send over there, and they'll just grab up the pieces. But this whole idea that we could destroy a country and ruin it and do so much harm to our people at home, clearly evidenced that damage, but the family type of damage that is done. It's just amazing to me how long we put up with that and And as Alter said, I think the strongest argument that hurts us is they are patriotic and we're not patriotic. And you mentioned the debates. I wasn't considered very patriotic.
Well, that was a tactical loss and a strategic victory, you know. But that's a good point you make about patriotic. It really is a good point, because the next clip I wanted to show, the next video clip I wanted to show, was Senator Graham in Israel saying exactly what you said. Now, I'll leave this for the voters of South Carolina to decide. But if anyone thinks this is patriotic, I just wonder about that. Play that second video clip. Here's Senator Graham.
You ready? Thumbs up back there. Thumbs up from everybody. Okay. Well, I'm Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina. I'm back. I come here every 2 weeks where I need to or not.
We can pause that
one.
I'm back. I come here every 2 weeks whether I need to or not. So what is a senator from South Carolina? Why is he going to Israel every 2 weeks? And who's paying for it?
Boy, don't put that in the form of a question, because it's all idiocy.
Yeah.
When you realize how damaging it is, how anti-patriotic it is, how anti-constitutional it is, how anti-immoral it is
to
do all this, and yet they do it. And then the one thing is, people don't like hypocrisy. But what you pointed out at the beginning, I mean, he changed his tune. He's more educated now, and now he loves the president. So
yeah. Well, I've got one more Lindsey Graham, and this is now. If anyone else were to say that, they may be considered to have said something untoward. But listen to what he's saying in this third video clip. A lot of people picked up on this yesterday. That third clip. We don't need to play the whole thing, but I'll stop you when I just want to get that first part of it down.
The wars of the future are being planned here in Israel, because if you're not one step ahead of the enemy.
What a quote. The wars of the future are being planned here in Israel, is what he said in Israel. I mean,
another truth.
That's exactly. The truth.
How are we going to handle it?
Yeah. The wars of the future are being planned here. Well, let them do it. Let them do it.
His statement about, I'm back here every 2 weeks, whether you need me or not, or something like that. Yeah. I mean, he was so arrogant.
Yeah. It's incredible. But we'll see what happens in his primary. But he is definitely not a force. If I were a member of the United States Armed Forces, and I heard someone say this, you know, because they're being called on to give the ultimate sacrifice for their country, Iran's not about to attack us, I would be disgusted, you know, for someone to say this.
Yeah, this is so obvious, but I always think about the invisible things that happen. You know, the injury done to families, especially when the draft is on. But even without the draft, they drag these reservists, the Middle East war. That isn't the purpose of the reservists. They were just to go and start a war. Now the evidence is coming out so clearly that a lot of that stuff was just canned. You know, like we're witnessing now, they create the problems to win over. At the same time, deep down, I think what's really happening is the dollars, the military dollars, is probably a much more powerful weapon than it would be to use patriotism. But they use them both. The money people want, and it's probably a joint effort. The military people know how to use patriotism to get their money.
Yeah, and certainly the military-industrial complex does. I wanted to give Dr. Paul a brief update, because we've been talking about the Iran talks for a few days. Now, just before I left for the studio, the talks had concluded. This is Witkoff and Kushner indirectly discussing with the Iranian foreign minister Araghchi in Geneva. And the Wall Street Journal, I didn't send this to you because I just saw it. The Wall Street Journal posted on X from the Wall Street Journal where we stand right now, because everyone wants to know, is it war or not? Wall Street Journal says, Iran pitches new ideas in nuclear talks, but not the one that matters to Trump. But if you look over here at the bullet points, Dr. Paul, it looks like Iran has actually floated some serious compromises that should be considered. I'm actually surprised at some of these. A three-year pause on uranium enrichment. I did not expect that at all. Sending some enriched uranium abroad, possibly to Russia. They had initially said absolutely not. And something that we talked about yesterday, future Iran-U.S. business deals if sanctions are lifted. We looked at that as a hopeful sign. So they threw out some serious compromises. But they say Iran refuses to fully dismantle its nuclear program. That's what Netanyahu wants. And the U.S. wants a complete halt to enrichment plus missile limits. Iran wants major sanctions relief, including access to frozen oil funds. Now, here's how the foreign minister, Araghchi, characterized the talks. If you go to the next one, Iran's foreign minister, Araghchi, confirmed the talks with the U.S. are headed in the right direction. Quote, there has been good progress compared to the last meeting, and now we have a clear path ahead, which I think is positive, end quote. No date for the third round was set, but Iran and the U.S. agreed to work on the draft texts and set another date. So it looks like, fingers crossed, they had a reasonable discussion. But unfortunately, if past is prologue and I were an Iranian, I would probably be more worried now than ever, because this is when the sneak attacks come, I think.
You know, they, it seems like what they want to do is declare victory. And there's no official war yet, but the thing is coming. But to expect them to do it, to bomb and surround them and boycott them and punish them for years and coups that we have committed in involvement and all this, and it's something that they just continue with and they never seem to stop. And now they're able to turn around and and gang up on them. And right now, though, the gang that is automatically so strongly anti common sense when it comes to Iran, that there's still some very, very powerful people behind the scenes, and they have it so that if you don't go along with it, you're anti-Semitic or whatever, they'll figure out.
Yeah. Well, I found one chart, and I didn't show it to you, but I know that this will immediately speak to you. I think this is the best argument for why this would be a disaster. Now, this is Patricia Marins, who I follow on X, and I recommend her. I don't think she's always spot on, but she's very, very insightful. The chart on the left is U.S. national debt set to rise by $2.4 trillion a year in the next 10 years. And you can see that chart. Here we are at 2026 at 39, at 2036, 64 trillion estimated. That is a math. This is from Bloomberg. And Patricia writes, the main concern for the American people should not be an attack on Iran, which would just be one of the many in recent years, but rather the possibility of it escalating into a real regional war requiring enormous resources and generating even more debt. So she's basically saying, I'll simplify it. Our credit card is beyond maxed out, but we're over at the Maserati dealership looking at brand new Maseratis. Right. You know, you can't afford it. You can't do this. So,
you know, when she or anybody quotes numbers can get pretty dry. But charts like this and the movement of it, what it was like 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and you see one curve, it is really dramatic, and that chart tells you that. But that's a chart we can use about everything that we've been doing in this country with spending money and prices and all the problems that we face, which are all man-made. I mean, it is a nature that brings this about, and it's something that we have to deal with. And yet, right now, we seem to be at a very crucial point where things tomorrow, the next day, or the next week may well, you know, be a big deal. And right now, it doesn't look like all of a sudden that we're going to wise up and say, you know, we've made a mistake. We shouldn't be doing this. And we think we're getting too much advice from foreign dignitaries. I think we'll come home and take care of our people at home.
I mean, who could look at that chart and not have a panic attack, you know? I mean, it is so terrifying, this the chart. Like, I worry for our kids, grandkids, and so on.
It's different this time.
Yeah, that's what they always say, right? Yeah.
It's different this time. Yeah. They know how to they're better managers. We have better people.
We got MMT.
At the Fed. yet they, the one of the biggest economic argument right now is with the Fed and the president.
Yeah.
So there's no uniform arguments there.
Well, one of the other things we wanted to touch on, well, the other thing we wanted to touch on today is an article in Politico about Thomas Massie, because it's pretty interesting. If you go to that, this is a magazine piece. You're going to see more defections. That's the quote from Thomas Massie. Thomas Massie's ominous prediction for the GOP. He sat down with an interview. If you go to the next one, Massie has gone toe-to-toe with the president of the U.S., the Speaker of the House, and the Attorney General in just the last few months. And he says there is more to come. He joined several other Republicans to buck President Donald Trump and Speaker Johnson on legislation that would block some Trump tariffs. And he had the ominous prediction for the GOP leadership in the coming months. Listen, this is a great quote. Go ahead to one, I think, maybe two. Here he goes. On any given day, I would just need one or two of my own co-conspirators to get something done, he said. I think you're going to see more defections. Very, very interesting prediction, Dr. Paul.
Boy, sure is. And we'll have a great deal of significance if these defections come. But I don't know how many people are worrying more now, but it probably is getting the attention of people. And maybe it'll give the encouragement, and hopefully, you know, let's say six come across, and they have an enlightenment. Six may turn into 60 or 50 or a larger number, but that's the way to do it. I think Thomas is doing a good job, and I admitted to you that I would agree with him and know with him. But he's gutsy.
Yeah, he's got a lot of energy. He's taking the slings and arrows. I don't think there's anyone else anywhere.
Well, it's a subject that's so rotten. It makes it hard to do. But avoiding it and ignoring it and not dealing with it, that's pretty ugly, too. That makes it worse, you know, if you tolerate it.
Well, I think this is one of the benefits of having such a razor-thin majority, you know, because you only need a few defections either way. You know, and some Republicans are going to vote on principle, shocking as that may sound, and that will happen. So it almost has the effect of having like a multi-party, parliamentary democracy, where you'll have a spoiler party or a party that can, as a minor party, but can move things. This is essentially, I think, de facto that. But if you skip one ahead, here's one of the answers from the interview. Trump often wields power. Go to the next one. We're not going to talk about Bondi. I took too many. I just wasn't sure. So here's a question from Politico to Congressman Massie. Trump often wields power on Capitol Hill through intimidation and fear. That obviously has not broken through on the Epstein matter as much. Several of you defied him on tariffs as well. How is that toolkit wearing thin for him that he's not able to badger enough Republicans into falling in line? And Thomas Massie says, the margin is razor thin. So on any given day, I would just need one or two of my own co-conspirators to get something done. And what's happening is that the retirement caucus is growing and primary days are coming up and passing. Once we get past March, April, and May, which contain a larger portion of their Republican primaries, I think you're going to see more defections, because quietly and privately, people are telling me they agree with me. And so there are people who plan on running again who will be past their primaries or certainly past that date. So people are basically, they like what he's doing. They don't think the tariffs are working. They recognize that there are attacks on the American people. They want transparency on Epstein and many other things, and spending. So it's interesting what he's saying. And by defections, it just means they're coming over toward the side of liberty rather than the side of being dedicated to the person and the president.
Well, I was glad the issue of tariffs made its way into it, because it's something different than the Epstein thing.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That is so sickening that the tariffs are pretty darn important. And this whole foreign policy, what we do in this threat of war, is so important, because they plan to spend money, a lot of money we don't have. And if people die, that's just tough. That's the way wars are. And that attitude is bound to lead to major problems, because if we could just see, step in the right direction, if we could just get people saying, yes, we don't want to be hypocrites. We don't want to say one thing and do something else. And I think there's that's one of the worst parts of Washington. They're easily intimidated, and they're convinced, you know, it's the connection of the member and their constituency. But I think they lack one more thing, is I'm going to measure, because we live in a democracy.
Yeah.
We need to do another poll. We need to do this. They never work on the idea, which it motivated me, is if you're confident about it and you think you're on the right track, you do your very best and present it, and maybe there'll be more conversions than you know, and maybe they won't be as fast as you think. Yeah. But I think that people want consistency, especially when things go bad. So someday they're going to wake up, why'd we have all those deficits?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And they don't realize, well, there's a lot of people who are guilty of the spending.
Well, that's been our struggle with the Ron Paul Institute. We're in for the long haul. Someone asked me the other day, well, what's your goal? What are you trying to accomplish? Well, it's a long goal, but it's education. We're trying to educate, especially for coming generations, you know.
Yeah.
And it's anyway, there's one, I had to add one that was funny, because this really captures the personality and the sense of humor, the ironic and wry sense of humor of Thomas Massey. If you put that next one up, I was just laughing out loud when I saw this, because I can hear Thomas's voice. The question was, when was the last time you heard directly from the president or his team about anything? Massey responds, does the prayer breakfast count? I mean, he called me a moron at the prayer breakfast.
That is good.
That's so Thomas. But I do want to have one last clip, because I think President Trump or his team thought they were being clever, and they put up a poll on X saying, do you think Massey's doing a good job or a bad job? And it didn't turn out like they hoped. There are two thumbs up for a great job, one thumbs up for a good job, one thumb down for a bad job, and two thumbs down for a terrible job. Well, the good and terrific job added together are about 68% of the votes. So it's a massive, massive vote in favor of Thomas Massey, even on President Trump's own commentary account on X. 68% of the people think he's doing good or excellent. So I don't know. They're going to probably try to scrub this poll.
Maybe all news is good news if you present it in the right manner.
Exactly. Well, I'll close out today and remind everyone to put those set that calendar for April 25th down here in Lake Jackson for the Ron Paul Institute Spring Conference. I will get those tickets on sale hopefully by the end of the week and make some announcements on speakers. But really, regardless, we're all going to get together and have a great time, get to know each other. And, I mean, we always have a great time. So it's also a nice time of year down here. We'll look forward to seeing you, and I will keep you guys updated. Over to you, Dr. Paul.
Very good. And I want to thank all our excuse me again. And I want to thank all our supporters for being with us on these issues and promoting what we're doing, because it, like Daniel said, it is truly an educational issue, and it takes time, but it's also a moral issue and a constitutional issue. So thank you very much for joining us today, and please return to the Liberty Report soon.
Thanks for watching the Ron Paul Liberty Report. Like and subscribe to help spread the message. And until next time, live free.
This country is in-